Hello, welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today, I am talking to the founder and creative director of No One True Anything, Jake Posner, and a little bit about No One True Anything. Their approach to creating the brand was to captivate an audience with nonsense. Their branding is broken down into syllables to reflect how the noter visionary minds processes words. The word processing is something unique with dyslexia playing a fundamental part in our daily lives and our literature. The No One True Anything visionaries believe that creativity holds no bounds and should be an expression of the mind, even when restrictions are put in your way. When creating their debut collection, they were told how their vision of a high-end sustainable streetwear fashion label would be almost impossible to produce, with too many components needed to fulfill their vision of creating what they had already envisaged. With many hours of research and meetings with various textile production companies, their vision started to appear and their components started to merge and attract. Okay, well, fascinating story. Really interesting narrative to this brand. And here to tell us more about No One True Anything is the founder, Jake Posner.
So I'm Jake Posner, and I found No One True Anything a little while ago. And it's sort of now only just coming to fruition, really. So I, believe it or not, had a dream whereby I created a fashion brand. And like, I know it sounds really cliche, but that's the truth. And I woke up the next day, it was on a Friday evening, I had the dream. And I woke up the next day on a Saturday and I was like, I need to do this. Like, something's telling me that I need to go and do this. So I sort of set about it. And always had the idea of wanting to make in Europe, and sort of knocked on some doors, physically. I didn't sort of just use the internet, physically went to Portugal, knocked on some doors. This is, sort of the end of 2018 / beginning of 2019, trying to basically work with manufacturers and suppliers to really get what I was wanting to achieve. And at the time I was told, no, you're too small. You haven't got enough money. We can't fulfill your orders. And I was like, fine, okay, look, here's some details of mine. It'd be good to stay in touch. And then the pandemic came.
Yeah. And so how did that?
It's bad. You know what? I say this as lightly as possible, but for me on a personal level, it benefited me because the factories that I'm working with didn't have the orders coming in from the big brands and the big players within sort of the fashion industry. In touch, and I was really lucky when I was out in Portugal. I was speaking with an agent who basically can help deal with my orders and my ideas and my designs and sort of get them to the suppliers. And I contacted her, and she was like, yeah, like, perfect, now's a good time. So it sort of stemmed from there, really. And then yeah, got to work on it.
Cool. So talk to me a little bit about the brand, how it is now, and like, what is the philosophy of the brand and what makes it different?
So the brand is still very much in its infant phase. You know, I'm trying to find my way. It's a very competitive industry. And I feel like the philosophy of the brand is, essentially, it allows me to be the truest version of myself, which I really like. You know, I've always wanted to be in a space where I can create stuff using my some people would probably call it strange, but using my strange brain. Like, I just have a thing and I just sort of blurt out random stuff and draw random things. And, you know, people would always be like, what are you doing? But at the same time, I wanted that I was creating and the designs, I wanted it to have an actual backstory to it. So I feel like the philosophy of my brand is, you know, the name sort of, if you sort of hear the name for the first time, you might think, doesn't really make sense. And that's exactly what it's made to do. And slogan, I guess, sums that up as well. No one sense made nonsense. And that sort of all stems from my dyslexia. And that also stems from my ulterior motive or my ulterior perspective on how the world works. And I'll sort of give you an example of that. It's like, everyone's all of a sudden got so hung up on this metaverse. What is the need? Why do we need a metaverse? You know, during, go back to pandemic, and during the pandemic, we were all locked in our houses and we were all talking to each other on Zoom or house party or, you know, whatever it might be. And we're all complaining that we couldn't go out, we couldn't do stuff. But yet we're now all of a sudden in a frame of mind whereby the metaverse is now the whole new thing. And everything's been taken over by the metaverse with, I'll buy clothes on metaverse. And I just feel like we're now, you know, going back to one guy, like the metaverse and Meta is Mark Zuckerberg. Like Mark Zuckerberg had his time. And I feel like we really need to, as a human race, we really need to move on from being stuck behind a desk and ordering everything from Amazon or sitting on Facebook, and now the metaverse coming out and building a life on metaverse. Like, have we destroyed our own natural world that much that no one wants to live in it, and people bury their heads in the sand and they now live in a virtual world? And that's where it comes from. Like, that is ultimately the brand name, but then you've got it doesn't quite make sense with the dyslexia as well. So I guess those are the two key philosophies.
Yeah, I have that also, that thought where I think when I notice it more when you're in a group, maybe you're out for a drink and there's about seven or eight of you around a table, and then there's always one person on their phone. And yes. I do think, like, well, how boring are we that you have to now kind of, you know, get involved with some kind of useless doom scrolling of Instagram and, you know, get exactly. into some kind of comment thread or check a forum on your face. It's basically the invisible slap to the face, because they're not saying anything, but they are saying something at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's the, like we're also saying actions speak louder than words.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not saying no words, but their actions are just basically saying
you need to know.
You're not as interesting as this cat that I'm following on Instagram.
Yeah. And you know, again, you know, when we are scrolling through these platforms, there's realistically, again, it goes back to the brand name and sort of the ulterior motive. There's no one else actually getting any benefit out of this apart from the likes of people like Mark Zuckerberg. You know, these platforms money through people taking our attention and then the advertising as well. So, you know, like they deliver the impressions to people so that the advertising revenue carries on coming through. And I just feel like it's a massive step in terms of how the human race actually needs to be to interact.
So I've noticed on the website, you mentioned your dyslexia there. How has that played a part in how you're shaping this brand?
So the way in which that I shape the brand is, if you take, for example, like the debut collection, for me to be able to spell a lot of words and for me to be able to write things like an email or a blog post or press release, whatever it might be, I'm breaking down nearly every single word into syllables to try and make sure that I'm spelling it in the right way. So the debut collection, it's Dave, so D-E-B, hyphen U-T. So it's essentially debut broken down into the two syllables. And that's something that I really feel is important to me as a person and to me as a brand, because, you know, going to school and being dyslexic was difficult. I became the class clown. I didn't want to be the class clown, but it was my way of being like, of hiding my frustration from not being able to do the work.
And so have you kind of channeled that and almost like turned your weakness into your strength, or harnessed that and used it as a tool?
I would say both. I would say that I use my dyslexia to be a strength of mine, and also a tool. And I know that a lot of people suffer with that. I think it's like, I might be wrong, but I think it's about 4 million people in the UK do have dyslexia. And I feel like some, I never was, but I feel like some people would be embarrassed by their dyslexia. I've never been embarrassed by it. I've always sort of harnessed it and loved it, shouted about it. And I sort of want people through, you know, the messaging of the brand and the concept of the brand, I want people to be able to feel comfortable in themselves as well, by being like, look, this brand has done, you know, whether or not it works really well, I don't know. I can't unfortunately see into the future as much as I hope it does. But, you know, whether or not, you know, people will look at it and be like, okay, so Jake is 28. He failed miserably at school. He got told that he wasn't going to do anything. He got told that he wasn't good enough. And this is all because he was dyslexic, but I'm also dyslexic. And if Jake can go and do it, then you know, I really want to achieve something as well, and use my, and you know, LinkedIn have now classed dyslexia as a skill. And I want people to be like, my skill can now help me learn and help me create something, or help me get the next best job, or whatever it might be. So I really want to sort of, as well as create, I want to inspire.
And I think people like being part of a club, and also with fashion, they like to have a narrative in terms of, you know, what they're buying. They can then just say, if people ask them, what are you wearing? Then you can always have a cool story behind it. I remember vividly about 20 odd years ago, I had a t-shirt. It was by a brand, I think called Marshalls or something like that, Martial Artists. And on it was an anagram with this guy sat on a couch, but the anagram said something like, the sofa killed my brother Neil. And the guy basically had a brother called Neil who was a bit of a layabout, shall we say, didn't get off the couch and died of like obesity or something like that.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of doing a bit of a job of explaining it, but basically I thought the concept behind it was really cool, and I loved
that
explaining it to people and going, oh yeah, this was made by, and inside the t-shirt there was like a whole embroidered bio, so you'd roll up the hem and there was like almost like 400 odd words that went through the whole backstory. And I used to love doing that, you know, in pubs, because when people would ask, you can just roll up the t-shirt and there would be the story that you'd show to people. So I do think people have, and I don't think that's changed, I think people have always latched on to having something very very theirs, you know, very clubbable, you know.
It's going to be something
that they're going to tell somebody else about, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree more, which is why, you know, I might mention it before, where I didn't want to just make clothes. You know, I feel like anyone can sort of, you know, oh, let's make a t-shirt. I wanted something that has a story. Every single tiniest of details, I will sort of not panic over. I don't know what the word is, but I will really go into detail, the tiniest details, to make sure that everything is correct and sort of as good as it can be. So yeah.
Cool. Dig it, man. I dig it, Jake.
Thank you.
Where you're heading.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Talk to me about the sustainability. That's also a big theme on the website. How do you make that work for the brand?
So how I make that work for the brand. So, you know, I've always looked at sustainability as either like the food chain or evolution, whereby you start at the very bottom of the food chain or the start of evolution, and you have, in fashion's case, you have the raw materials and the materials that are naturally grown, or in some cases, or in most cases at the moment, unfortunately, the materials that are grown harmfully. So that is the sort of very beginning of the food chain, with where it starts, the materials. Then the next stage of that is the human race. Whereby people are actively gathering the materials, whether that be the cotton or whether that be sort of like viscose or anything like that. And to be able to really have a sustainable brand, I really think you have to support the human race before you can support anything else. You know, my pieces are made from 100% organic cotton. There are brands out there that use organic cotton, and they can say it's made from organic cotton, but at the same time, that organic cotton, as long as it's over a certain percentage of the garment, you can mix it also with polyester. Now, polyester isn't good for the environment. So if we go back to the humans, if humans are not paid a fair and living wage for the work that they're doing, then the world is never going to improve. The world is only going to get worse. I believe that there are around 18 million people living in Lagos. Lagos is so overpopulated and so highly polluted, but they don't have any money. Like, for Lagos to be able to go to renewable or green electricity, the only way of doing this is by the more economically developed countries giving the less economically developed countries a grant, not a loan, but a grant. Because a grant, as I'm sure you know, you don't have to pay it back. So for me, in my case, when my pieces are made, I don't argue with the price. The price is the price. The price is the price for a reason. And if I also feel that the price isn't enough, I'm happy to pay more. I'm happy for that to be reflected in the people who have made my pieces. I'm happy for that to be reflected in their wage. Not going back into the pocket of the CEO or the managing director of the manufacturing facility, but into the actual workers, because it's all well and good paying people a fair and living wage, but if you're just working to live, nothing's going to change. Let's take the petrol crisis that we're going through now. Petrol's been at the highest price point it's ever been at, and if people are struggling to pay their bills and electricity as well, is the same thing. We're not going to get anywhere as a human race, and we're not going to be a sustainable. We're not going to be a sustainable like world. And that's ultimately the most, in my eyes, the most important thing about sustainability as a human race.
Let's keep the human race going, people.
exactly that.
Not for my kids, but for your kids, whoever's listening. It's too late for us. As in my generation. I mean, I'm in my 40s now. I'm on the back nine, to use a golfing analogy. I don't know why. I don't play golf. Don't watch it. But
I like it.
I always like thinking that when once you're past 40, you're kind of on the back nine. You're closer to the finish line. But anyway, let's. I want to talk about the designs. So talk to me about how you came up with them, what the influence is, what basically did you have to go through to get these garments from your mind to execution?
So, as a kid, I was always influenced by fashion, specifically more the streetwear. I'm a big sort of lover of hip hop, especially like the early 90s stuff, and then coming through to like the early 2000s when people like Kanye were really, really coming to the fore. I'm 28, and that for me was as young as I was back then. I really grew up on it. I really loved it. My pocket money would go on saving up to buy Air Force One trainers. And it's always something that I've wanted to do, and I've always been inspired by different brands. And for me, being able to take what was in my mind and putting it onto a garment, I'm not gonna say it was easy, but it felt natural to me. It felt like, right, I have these ideas. How can I transfer these ideas into being something that I really feel is a sense of a design that is worthy of what I would have liked to have seen as a kid, but bring it into the modern day. And I sort of got to work on it, and the dyslexia played, going back to that, it played a big part in creating this design with the hyphenated words. And then you also take parts of the design as well, whereby it shouts about sustainability, whereby we're taking materials that have already been used and we're recycling them for the recycled polyester label. So, I'm not saying recycled polyester is the complete answer. It's not, but it's a start into creating a more sustainable fashion world. And so for me, I wanted to take those parts and develop it into a design. and then also using embroidery to showcase these pieces. That was a big thing for me as well. I feel like the embroidery has more of an attention to detail. Or on the website, I call it detail to attention, just to be backwards and sort of have a sort of, you know, a dyslexic view on it. But I do feel like the embroidery gives it a much more detailed view of what I wanted to create. Mm. So that is ultimately the design phase. You know, I wanted it to be to start with a bit more simplistic, a bit more minimalistic, because I don't want it to be something too in your face to start with. You know, I remember the first time that I saw a brand like Moncler, for example, and everyone had these shiny black puffer jackets on. And I was like, what is this brand that everyone's wearing? I felt like out of place. I felt like I wanted to know. And all they had on them was a tiny little Moncler badge in a circle on the left arm. It made me so curious that I didn't want the brand name to be the focal point of what I'm creating. Mm. I wanted people to sort of see a debut t-shirt or a debut hoodie and be like, what is that? What are people wearing? Like, how can I find it? And for me, that is a really big part of my design. So I sort of drew inspiration, I guess from the likes of Moncler too.
Nice, some nice pulls. So how many people are we talking about in the company? I guess you're the kind of the one man band in many ways, wearing lots of different hats. But do you have other people doing marketing or social media? What's the setup there?
I'm a one man band.
All the way down, love it. Love all, the one man
all
band.
All the way down. I deal with the supply chain. I deal with the design. I deal with the manufacturing. I deal with the website. I deal with the photography. You know, literally everything.
You know, it'd be good if you could probably just get a couple of interns, just to, I don't know, promise them the world, a bit like Leonardo DiCaprio does in pretty much every movie. You know, just go, come on, follow me. I'll take you some places, and then just sack them at the end of the day.
I mean, like, I've had some guidance. Don't get me wrong. From, you know, I've got a friend called Josh who helps me a lot, sort of give me a lot of guidance in regards to the public relations side of things, you know. And I'd love to employ him, I'd love to bring him in, but the funds just aren't there. You know, I've self-funded this business.
Well, not yet. I mean so you're a one-man band at the moment, but talk to me about the British Vogue endorsing the brand to be part of Bright Young Things. What happened there?
Yeah, so so this actually perfect timing. So I just mentioned Josh, and he went to my school, and he was the year above me. And at school, I feel like when someone's sort of the year above or the year below, you don't really socialize too much. It's sort of like a bit like of a, I don't know, it's a bit of a stigma or something like that, whereby you don't socialize with people in different years. And I was browsing through LinkedIn, and I went onto my old school, and it came up with Josh, and I saw he did PR, and I was like, right, I really want some help with my PR. Let me message him. So I've messaged him. He was like, look, let's meet. So I've met Josh at our sort of like local like gym and coffee location, and sort of sat there, had a coffee, and I told him what I'm doing, showed him some of the pieces, and he was like, mate, I really love it. I really like the story. I really like how you've created it. Like, let me help you. Let me give you some guidance. I was like, okay, sure thing, no problem. So he's made a call to a PR agency called Fashion Crossover, and he's sort of having this conversation. He's looking at me, and I'm like, what are they saying? Like, I was worried that they were saying something bad and that it wasn't going to go anywhere. And he was like, look, they want you to sort of put an application in to apply for Bright Young Things, which is a Vogue feature that will be endorsed by sort of, you know, the editor in chief and the fashion department of Vogue. And I was like, no, you're lying to me. Like, no way, this doesn't happen. And he was like, no, promise you. So we've gone back and we booked in a meeting with Fashion Crossover for the Friday. And I presented the brand and I presented myself and what I want to do and what I want to achieve and how I'm making my pieces and et cetera, et cetera. And I just remember like going home that evening and I was just so excited. I was like, I really want it. Like, I'd love to be part of this. But if it doesn't happen, it's not the end of the world. I'll carry on building. And I was driving Josh mad. I was like, please, can you call them for an answer? He's like, no, you can't do that. Just wait. And I was like, okay. 21st, like, I remember the day, it meant so much. I mean, 21st of December, it was a Tuesday, so just before Christmas. It was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we got a call. And it was like, yeah, we both want your brand to be selected as part of the Bright Young Things. And
wow.
I was just like, this is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I've got goosebumps now just telling the story back.
Awesome.
And for me, it was just incredible. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to being featured in the Bright Young Things feature in British Vogue print. And yeah, it just means a lot to me that such an institutional publication within the fashion world and yeah, has sort of looked at my brand and has liked it. It means a lot.
I mean, it's also nice when someone just kind of backs you or pats you on the back and kind of endorses you. Yeah. And just says, look, you know, what you're doing over here is okay. But then it's another thing when you have like an establishment do it, you know, when someone just, you know, when a powerhouse comes in and gives you a nice little back rub,
yeah.
You know, that's something else, isn't it? So,
it really was.
Good for you, man. So,
yeah.
Good for you. I love it.
Thank you.
Moving forward, Jake, what are your plans for 2022? Have we got any other designs, any other releases? What's happening?
Yeah, so 2022 is actually looking promising, providing that I have the funds to do all of this. But you know, my brand is focused so much on the slow fashion side of things, and you know, the circular fashion and anti-fast fashion. The debut collection is going to be carried on. You know, this is sort of the beginning of the debut collection, introducing a few pieces, starting with the t-shirts and the hoodies. I do have my joggers coming out. They should be available next week, I think. And socks as well, which are all made from the organic cotton, all made in Portugal as well. So sort of really follows on from the hoodies and the t-shirts. And moving forward, I've just submitted my concept sheets and my designs to the lady that I work with in Portugal, who's honestly amazing. And we were on the phone today, and we were going through that. And they consist of knitwear, they consist of woolen trousers mixed with, it's either going to be like recycled wool mixed with organic cotton. Or recycled wool mixed with recycled cashmere for the trousers, in the process of some bomber jackets as well, and some long car coats, scarves and beanies as well for the winter. And then in May time should hopefully have denim jackets.
Cool.
And these denim jackets really sort of hammer home the ethos of the brand and the sustainability. I don't want to go into it too much now. I sort of want to save it for when they're available, for sort of like a, you know, like a bit of a surprise. But the technologies and the way that I'm making these jackets, I think, as far as I know, it's something completely brand new to the industry. I'm sure there's a few brands doing it, but it's not mainstream yet.
Right. When's that coming out?
I'm hoping to have them out in May or June.
All right.
And, you know, of course, I'll sort of share more on those as we get nearer to the time.
Drop me a note. But, well, where do you hang out, Jake? Do you hang out on Instagram, Facebook? Where's your main?
Yeah, I mean, sort of my go-to is Instagram.
What's your handle? Where can people find you?
At no one true anything.
All right, cool. Same as the website. And we'll leave all the links over on the show notes at menswearstyle.co.uk. Jake, really good talking to you.
And you. Thank you for having me.
And have a great weekend, and keep doing the Lord's work.
I will try. And you as well. And I hope Rye gets better.
I know, yeah. For people listening to this, I've got something going on with my eye. I'm actually doing this in the dark with my eyes closed. I'm feeling my way through this interview, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, we didn't mention that, did we? I just sort of dropped you in it there. But yeah.
All right, man. Cool. Have a good weekend. I'll see you later.
You too. Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.